Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy.
Well, before we get started with the story today, we actually got some exciting news. We signed up with Podbean.
Yay.
And so now we get to download our podcast to more platforms.
Like Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, of course. Tune in with Alexa, Player FM, Listen Notes, Podchaser, Boomplay. And coming soon, Samsung, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts.
Yep. And so, but we are still going to do our YouTube channel also. And then we're also adding a Facebook. I've got a Facebook page, and we're actually looking into getting into Facebook podcasting too.
We're going to get legit.
Yeah. So, guys, sign up and look into us and everything. Just start listening in, and hopefully we don't disappoint. With no further ado.
How could we ever?
Yeah. Without further ado, let's get to the story.
Oh, okay. So today we're going to talk about Ellen Greenberg. Some of you may know this case. Some of you may not. If you don't, prepare to get frustrated.
Yes.
Because this one is a shocker, and you'll see why. So Ellen Greenberg was a 27-year-old first grade teacher in Philadelphia. She was an only child and was very close to her parents, obviously. She was described as a girly girl, kind, nurturing, and very athletic. It was perfect for her to go into teaching, and she loved it. She was very active, not just in the classroom, but in all aspects of her career. She was a go-getter. She was reported by friends and neighbors as having a raspy voice that was in contrast to her bubbly personality, but still suited her. Through mutual friends, she went on a blind date with Sam Goldberg. He was a producer for NBC at the time, and the two just clicked right away. She would often tell people that they didn't have that sometimes awkward stage of the relationship when you're getting to know each other, because they got along so well from the beginning. They dated for 3 years, and then they got engaged and was planning their wedding for sometime in August of 2011. On January 26th of 2011, Ellen went to work and it was snowing. The snow kept getting worse, so school was dismissed early. Ellen waited until all of the students were gone before she left, because all the parents had to be called and their kids had to be waited for rides home. had to wait for rides home. She got home and hung out with Sam for a little bit before he left to go work out. They lived on the 6th floor of their apartment building, and it had a built-in gym, so he didn't have to leave the building in what some were reporting as blizzard-like conditions. Ellen was in the kitchen when he left, making a fruit salad. Sam returned around 30 to 45 minutes later, according to the investigation report, but the door was locked.
And I know what you're wondering, you know, it's like, you know, why didn't he have a key to unlock his own door? You know, he did, but there was a latch, kind of like on the hotels, those type of door locks. And so it was locked, so he couldn't, whenever he did unlock a door, it just caught.
Yeah, like barely opened, like an inch or two.
So, I mean, that, you know, so he couldn't open the door.
Yeah, because those can only be done from the inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, he told police that he knocked on the door, he called her, he texted her, he even emailed her for the next quite a while with no response. And I'll tell you what the text said in order.
Okay.
Okay. He says, "Hello. Open the door. What are you doing? I'm getting pissed. Hello. You better have an excuse. What the fuck? Ah. And you have no idea."
Well, he sounded pretty aggressive.
He sounds pissed.
Yeah. I mean,
like, not concerned.
Yeah.
I would be concerned. If I couldn't get into somewhere where you were and you were not answering, I would immediately just, he's on the floor somewhere, he's stuck somewhere, he's fell down. I mean, anything.
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 Yeah.
Well, so pissed off Sam went to the doorman downstairs and asked him to help break the lock. But the doorman said that that was against policy. Now, Sam would later go on to say that the doorman came back to the apartment with him, but The doorman told police he did not. He stayed downstairs and he never came upstairs. So Sam busted through the door and he found Ellen on the kitchen floor with blood everywhere. He called his uncle and his cousin, who are both attorneys, and they told him to call 911. Now let's talk about the 911 call he made. It is available online if you want to hear it in its entirety for yourself, so that you can hear like his tone of voice, the way he says things, just his overall demeanor, because it is very, very suspicious. He says he found his fiancée in the kitchen with blood everywhere and can only see blood coming from her head. He speculates that maybe she has fallen and hit her head. Okay, that's a conclusion you can come to.
Yeah.
He's close enough to her that he sees that her face is purple and says that her hands are still warm. He also took the time to tell the operator his actions prior to calling, that he went to the gym and the door was locked. She didn't respond for about 30 minutes or so, so he busted down the door and then found her. He told her his entire alibi. He can't tell if she's breathing, so the operator tells him to look at her chest to see if it's moving up and down, because she's preparing him to do CPR. He does confirm at this point that she is on her back. He does that multiple times, and he says that she's not moving. Now, when the operator asks if he knows CPR, he says he doesn't, and she says she can help him. She can tell him what to do, and we have a little clip of his response to that when she asks if he wants to do CPR.
Yeah, and I'll play him here in just a minute.
Oh, you want to play them together?
Yeah, I'll play them together, beginning and the end.
Okay. So when she asked him if he wants to do CPR, his response was, well, I have to, right?
Yeah. and it's just, here's the clips. I mean, so you guys know that we're not just making this shit up. I mean, it's just, here's the first clip of it.
You are with me over the phone so they can...
I have to, right?
Okay, so get her fed on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off?
I mean...
oh, I have to, right?
I have to, right? I mean, yeah, it's your fiance. Do whatever you have to do to make her alive.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
You can tell the whole time, even him cussing at the end, he does not want to do CPR.
Yeah, and it's just... I mean, it's just... I don't know, is it... That's supposed to be your forever.
But, oh, yeah.
So here's the second clip. I mean.
Don't try that. Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper. Rip oh, my off. God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell with a knife. Oh, no. Her knife's sticking out.
Oh, my God. She stabbed herself. Oh, no. Right. Wait. It's sticking out.
Right. So as you can tell, the operator repeatedly had told him to move her to where she was flat on her back and to position himself beside her so he could do CPR. Now, mind you, he's already said multiple times she's on her back, but she tells him to rip her shirt so that he can get a clear line of her chest, and he says it won't come off because there's a zipper, and then just says, oh, my God, she stabbed herself.
So he didn't see this knife the whole time she's laying on her back? I mean, it's a knife.
It's protruding from her chest.
He thinks it's a zipper?
Well, so I thought maybe the knife was underneath her hoodie somehow, like maybe if she had actually stabbed herself and slid down or something onto the floor, that maybe it went up over the knife. Besides the fact that it's like a 5-inch handle, which is not tiny.
It's going to protrude out.
But then I did read in the reports that the cops said that she was stabbed through her clothing. So that means it went through. It couldn't have like slid up over it, or which I don't see how it could. Anyways, that's a big thing sticking out. Okay.
Yeah.
So he says, oh my God, she stabbed herself or fell on a knife. At this point, they can't continue with CPR, obviously. And he says it looks like the knife is going right into her heart. So they have to wait for EMS at this point. It was just odd that he immediately went to, she stabbed herself.
Yeah. I mean... But his first response was, oh, my God,
she stabbed herself.
She stabbed herself.
Yes.
That was his first response.
Initial, yes.
And you know, I didn't even talk about, so let's mention this right here. He called the uncle.
He did. He called his
before
uncle.
Before he called 911.
Correct.
911, then call somebody else.
No, he called his lawyer.
Exactly.
Yes.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's just like, what are you hiding?
Oh, immediately it's suspicious, right?
Yeah, it's suspicious. I mean, what are you hiding?
I'm telling you, this is so frustrating because there's so much back and forth and there's so much that could go either way. I know we have our opinions, of course, but by the time you get to the end of this, there's a lot of people that can say on both sides that they're right. So we'll see. We'll see. So there was a lot of red flags either way, right off the bat in the 911 call. And as an armchair investigator, they stuck out. Why did he make sure that he got his alibi on tape before he even started to help her? Like, he was close enough to her to see her face was purple. He said her hands were still warm. He couldn't see anything except there was possible blood coming from her head. And then why say she was on her back? We're going to get to that in a second, too. Ugh, I just can't with this. And then him saying, oh, do I have to? And it came to CPR. Okay.
I know.
Just so many things.
That just drives me crazy.
So many things. So two fire department members, a lieutenant, and an EMS officer arrived at the scene first. The EMS officer declared Ellen dead at 6:40 p.m. and then left, although instructed that he would likely have to be interviewed in a homicide investigation. But the EMS officer that left was never interviewed and never provided a statement, even though he was one of the first on the scene. And when police arrived, they found Ellen's body on the kitchen floor with her head and shoulders leaned against the bottom cabinets.
So not flat on the floor, like Sam said.
Not flat on the floor. Almost in a sitting position. Her angle.
Really?
That's a big key point in this, too. There's a lot of evidence that leans back on this.
So dumb.
Yes. So like I said, the knife that was in her chest, it was said it went through her clothes. So they think it's very odd as well that Sam did not notice it. And even after finding the knife, trying to unzip her jacket to do CPR. So let's talk about the crime scene. There were several knives found in the sink, but they had no blood on them. And the knife block was knocked over on the counter. Nothing else in this apartment was out of place. The issue I take is, why were there so many knives in the sink? And why was the knife block knocked over? Those things are heavy, and they're made that way so that they don't fall over because they're holding little stabby things. She would have had to been very aggressively making that fruit salad to knock that over and then to not pick it back up. If I knock something over in my kitchen, I'm going to pick it right back up and put it back in its spot. But one was not.
And I mean, even at that, if you knock over the knife block or whatever, you know, they're made precisely for the knives.
Right.
So when you knock it over, they don't just flop out.
They don't. No, that doesn't explain in any way, shape, or form how they got in the sink.
You pretty much have to turn it upside down.
Yeah, you got to take them out.
And shake it in order. Because, I mean, even when you turn it upside down, they'll actually catch because it's so tight.
Yeah, there are slots made specifically for the knives that go in them.
Yeah. So that don't make any sense. So.
Yeah, so it shows a little sign of haste, I guess is what I'd say. Somebody was in a big hurry, is what I took from that. Plus the fact that the knives had no blood on them in the sink. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ahead of myself because this just works me up. The medical examiner noted that there was a scrunchie on her wrist, a pair of glasses on the floor next to the body, and a miraculously clean white towel in her left hand. Now, keep in mind that she was left-handed, so likely any use of the knife would be done with the left hand that the towel was in. So how the towel got there is a mystery. How the towel was clean is a mystery. And then let's talk about her wounds. This is where it gets really crazy. There were about 20 stab wounds on her head, neck, back, and torso. There were 8 wounds in her chest, 1 in her stomach, 1 in her head that went through her skull, and 10 in the back of her neck. One of the neck wounds penetrated nerves and her brain. It was also noted that there were 11 bruises on her arms and legs that were in different stages of healing, and the initial autopsy showed the cause of death was a homicide.
But Sam wasn't arrested. He wasn't. No. Really, he wasn't really arrested. Was he taken in for questioning?
He was. He was. They handcuffed him and they took him down to the station. So they did interrogate him, I guess. Question him is the better word. But he was released that night. There was no.
Of course.
So the next day, on January 27th, Sam's uncle, the attorney, requested access to the apartment from the building manager to get some things of Sam's that he would need for the funeral. She called the police to see if it was something that she could do. Since this was a crime scene, they told her that there were no access restrictions on the apartment. And when she asked about the blood and, you know, the crime scene, they actually gave her a contact for a crime scene cleanup company. And she immediately called this company and they came and cleaned the apartment that day. The uncle went in and got Sam's suit, which makes sense. But what doesn't make sense is why he also took Ellen's phone, laptop, and engagement ring.
Why was it even still there is my question. I mean, if it's a homicide.
Right.
Shouldn't they have took a look into all of that?
Yes.
And the crime scene for evidence? I mean,
yes.
Besides the fact, again, we've done so many of these already that they have released the crime scene so early.
So fast.
And everything. I mean, it's like they didn't do their job.
No, they did not.
I mean, what was this? What did you say? A couple hours?
This was the next day.
Oh, the next. Well, either way.
The next day is when she asked. Had she not asked.
And the manager said, oh, there's no restrictions.
The police.
Oh, the police said there's no restrictions.
There's no access restrictions, which means anybody could go in there.
Which means that wipe your hands clean. They're done.
They're done. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, it was written up as a homicide, but they couldn't do the autopsy at 7 o'clock at night. They did the autopsy the next day, so it wasn't classified as a homicide until then. But if you remember when the EMS guy left, the other enforcement officer, they were like with the fire department and place like that. They were like, hey, you're going to probably have to fill out a statement for this homicide. Like they knew just looking at her that this was a homicide. So they knew and they still released everything and they still went on about their business. Mm. Yes. Red flags, red flags. So, they didn't even get the search warrant to take things from the crime scene until the day after that. So, this is now January 28th. But by this point, the apartment's clean. The lawyer had taken all the electronics. Like, there was nothing to go back and look at. It was done. Luckily, for Ellen's parents' sake, the building manager had the wherewithal about her to do, like, a video of the apartment before she had it cleaned. Because even to her, it was like, really? I can just go in there? So she even thought it was odd enough to where she wanted to take extra steps. Luckily she did, because otherwise there would be nothing to look at. So now this is all the police have to go off of is reports that were taken that night and then this video. So once the autopsy was done and they saw all of the wounds to her head and neck, they called in a neuropathologist, which is standard protocol when there's damage like that to the neck and near the spinal cord, and they have to determine if the spinal cord was damaged. This doctor said that the spinal cord was intact, that there was no damage. And as they investigate what they can with what they have left of a crime scene or a case, basically they have no crime scene, they found out that 2 months before Ellen died, she had been experiencing anxiety and stress from work, and a psychiatrist that she had seen 3 times prescribed her a normal level of Xanax. When that didn't help, she switched her to Ambien and Klonopin. The psychiatrist's notes show that Ellen was not suicidal, just experiencing an increased amount of anxiety and stress. But some of the side effects of the medications that she had been prescribed do show that suicidal thoughts and ideations can happen because of the medicine that you're taking for your anxiety. Well, the cops ran with this medication angle, and they had a meeting 2 months after her death with the medical examiner. And after this meeting, her autopsy report changed to show the cause of death as a suicide.
It's not something that, you know, people can, you know, say without a doubt. This is what suicide looks like.
Right. There's no clear cut.
Yeah, this is not something that people can say without a doubt that this is what suicide looks like. There's no freaking way.
Right. It comes in all shapes, sizes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you never know what somebody in that state of mind is willing to go through to make it all in.
That's very true.
But I highly doubt.
Of all the ways to do it. If this 20
times back the neck, she's left-handed. She had the towel in her left hand. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah. Oh, there's more.
Good night.
There's going to be more. Suicide does not have a look. And it's, I mean, not all sad people are having thoughts of self-harm, and not all happy people are truly happy. I mean, everybody presents differently. But it's that 20 stab wounds that gets me, too. And I warned you at the beginning this was going to be frustrating.
Yeah. Very frustrating.
Yes. And while I can see from an all-inclusive perspective that you couldn't maybe rule out suicide at that time, because as we said, there's no standard for it. Every case is different. It can be planned or it can be spontaneous. You never know what's going on inside of someone. And just because she had a bubbly personality on the outside doesn't mean that she wasn't fighting something on the inside. But I would not go straight to suicide in this case. It would not be something that I would write up without a shadow of a doubt. Maybe put it as suspicious, because there's very, very many unanswered questions out there. Luckily, they were able to get her electronics back from the lawyer uncle. But as everybody knows, the chain of evidence has now been broken because it has left the crime scene, went to someone else's house where they did whatever they wanted to it, and then came into police custody. Now, when they did look at her laptop, they found that there were Google searches for things like suffocation, suicide methods, quick suicide, and painless suicide.
I mean, if this was suicide, it wasn't quick or painless.
No, it was not. It was not. Not even close. But they did use this as another reason for their suicide ruling. And they can't rule out either that only Ellen had accessed her laptop to have even made the searches. We've heard of people setting things like this up to fit their narrative of what happened so that their alibi looks stronger. And also, the Greenbergs hired a technology expert who said that these were not direct searches. They're saying that they were what they call phantom searches, which is what the analytics associate to what you're actually searching. Like, you would see on a search history picture that, well, on our YouTube, we'll post up the search history picture of it. And you can see on it that there were actually searches around these for things like her medication, like Zoloft. And the experts are saying that when you search things like this, that it will also do searches for side effects of Zoloft, reasons to take Zoloft, et cetera, et cetera. Anything involved with it. Stories of people who took Zoloft and things happened or anything like that. And that's how you get those hundreds and thousands of pages of information when you do a Google search.
And I could see that. But also Sam's family had the laptop for some time before turning it over to the police.
True.
So should there be some investigation into whether, you know, or not these searches could have been planted there?
Right.
Because you can, I mean,
you can make anything look like.
Not to quote Cher, but you can turn back time on a laptop.
Oh my goodness.
I'm just saying. Yeah, you know, you can make it look like it's another day.
You could, yeah. I mean, we've seen that. We've seen fake text messages, yep, and fake emails, and we've seen all this. Yes. So we know that this is possible. But, I mean, Ellen's parents even had a hard time getting just regular documents in their daughter's case. Things that the investigators normally provide to the families or that are free to access. They had to order and pay for the autopsy report just to get a copy of it. And that's not how that's supposed to work. But they needed a new set of eyes on this. And they sent what they could get to their own forensic pathologist, who determined that besides the ridiculousness of suicide this way, the report showed the angles of the stab wounds came from different directions, and that there were multiple knives used, some that had smooth edges and some that had serrated edges. Remember when we talked about the multiple knives in the sink? That would mean that if she stabbed herself, she would have had to stab herself with one knife, clean the blood off, put it in the sink, then grab another knife and continue to stab herself.
You would have to have a pretty high pain threshold to stab yourself this many times and then, you know, this many times through, you know, then through the chest.
Yeah,
you know,
and then end it with the chest. Yeah, but the chest was the last one.
I mean, but it's like, you know, stab one. Oh, that ain't good enough. Let me grab another
right.
one. Stab. No, that's not good enough.
Right.
Which one's the finisher?
Exactly. And I just don't see anybody having that kind of strength.
If I stab myself, I'd be like, oh, I messed up.
I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, this is not happening.
Exactly.
I cry over a paper cut.
Okay. No, he doesn't.
I do.
You would pretty much have to be one of those people who can't feel pain. That is a real condition. It's extremely rare, and Ellen did not have that.
Yeah, but with her, exactly. I mean, with, you know, with the, like the psychiatrist saying she had high anxiety and.
This was very recent anxiety, too. It's not like she had suffered with this for her whole life or even years.
Yeah, I wonder where the anxiety came from. But anyway, well, that's speculation.
Ellen always said to the therapist that it was work-related. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, anyways.
She's a school teacher.
Yes. Yeah, and that's stressful. I mean, dealing with everybody else's kids. Sometimes I want to ship my kids off somewhere, too. But you can't when you're a teacher because they're your problem from 8 to 3. But the other teachers that were her colleagues said that they all had about the same level of stress, that she was not presenting more than other people.
Exactly. And the whole thing is, I mean, is like if your job is stressing you out to the point of this, find another job.
And she loved this job.
Exactly. That's why I'm not believing one bit that's her job.
I get you. Well, the Greenberg's pathologist said that this screams murder. They continued and got a second opinion even of that one. And the second forensic pathologist says that there were marks on the front of her neck that looked like a fingernail, along with bruising on the side of her neck, indicating strangulation. But most importantly, he went and physically examined Ellen's spinal cord because they still had it. Not the Greenbergs, the medical examiner. He said it was, in fact, damaged. So Ellen's parents filed a suit against the police department and the doctor who said that it was suicide.
Good for them.
They brought in a new specialized pathologist and a crime scene expert named Scott. Looking at a few photos of the crime scene that were left and the photos of Ellen's body, he says there is a clear line of blood that starts at her nose and runs towards her left ear horizontally across her face.
Okay, I know how gravity works.
Exactly.
And that sounds like she was laying flat on her back.
Right.
Not sitting half up like she was found.
Right. She would have had to been laying flat on her back for that to run from nose to ear. And then the question gets raised as to how'd she get set upright?
Yeah.
Because when the cops got there, she was upright. And remember whenever he made the 911 call, he'd said several times she was on her back. She's laying on her back.
Yeah.
So who moved her and why? Yeah. And the only person there was Sam. There was also a line of blood on her forehead that indicated that she was possibly moved in multiple different directions during what they're calling the attack. And yes, we're calling it an attack because Mama didn't raise no fool. And they also stated that there was no hemorrhage in her spinal cord. Now, no hemorrhage means no pulse, which means she was stabbed in the neck after she was dead.
So, I was just making sure, whoever did.
Yep. So, they can't determine the exact order that the stab wounds were received.
But they can definitely tell you that probably after number 10 or whatever was or 15. You never know. More than likely after number 15, she was already gone.
Could have been the first one.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm just saying we don't know what number.
We do not know.
What number the neck was.
There
was what, five in her neck?
Ten.
Ten alone in her neck?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Who are you? I just told the story.
I'm sorry. I get all flustered about just 20 of them, and I start thinking that somebody went crazy and just started stabbing all over, you know.
I'll tell you what they think here in a second. So they did an actual, like, 3D image, and they could determine, even though they couldn't determine which stab happened when, they could determine that at the angle they were going in, she could not have done that.
No,
there's several that they're like, there's no way she could have made that angle herself. So now that we're all on the same page, mostly, that she possibly did not commit suicide, let's talk about scenarios. So there's the abuse scenario. There was a lot of bruises on her arms and legs that were in various stages of healing. Some were newer, some were older. Then you have the text messages that Sam sent when he couldn't get in the door, showing his increased aggravation.
Yeah.
So if he's an abuser, that would sound like normal behavior for him because that's how they handle situations like that. And the fact that she had been reported by family and friends as seeming more withdrawn, less social, more anxious in the last couple of months, which she said was work related, but it could have been home related, and she just didn't want to. Well, a lot of victims will protect the abuser. They don't want other people to think badly of them.
They get more physical as time goes on, especially when they realize that they can't get away with it anymore.
Oh, exactly. And she actually told her parents about a month before her death that she wanted to move home. But she didn't say why. So they were actually who suggested that she see the therapist in the first place. But none of the people in her life have said that she said anything negative about Sam, ever. It was always good things and that she was looking forward to their wedding. But how would leaving her fiancé and moving home help with work stress? Like, she'd still have to find another job. And if it wasn't Sam, she could have found another job where she was. The change of location doesn't seem like it lines up. And then there's the robbery motive. So Sam stated in the 911 call that there didn't appear to have been a break-in. There were only two points of entry on their sixth-floor apartment, which was the front door and the balcony. And I'm calling it a balcony generously because this thing looks like literal inches coming out from the side of the building. I don't think anyone could actually stand on this thing the way it looks from the pictures.
Yeah, they said the balcony was like 6 inches.
I believe it. It looks like it's literally a rail up against the side of a
basically
door.
It's just basically you can open it.
To open the door.
That's it.
Yeah, and have some fresh air.
Yeah.
And according to Sam, the front door was locked, of course. And then according to police, there was no sign of forced entry or evidence that anyone had come through the balcony door. Remember, it was snowing pretty heavy that day, so there should have been some type of footprints or disturbance in the snow. But there wasn't anything, and there wasn't any wetness on the floor like snow had been tracked in and melted if someone had come through that balcony. And no one in the building reported any commotion other than Sam banging on his door, and no one reported any strangers in the building that day. When the police arrived, her jewelry and laptop and all that was still there until the uncle took them, so the robbery scenario does not seem like a likely way to go.
Yeah, you know, there was no... There was no cameras in the hall.
Right.
Maybe the suspect was someone from inside the building.
The call is coming from inside there.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing. You know, murders in the building.
Nice. There were no cameras in the hall. There was cameras downstairs, and they did catch Sam on the downstairs cameras, but most believe that it was just him trying to seal up his going to the gym alibi because he was reported as being seen wearing Timberland boots. And me, I'm allergic to working out, but I do know that you don't work out in boots.
No.
And I want to also bring up the latch on the door. You can see in these pictures that the latch is damaged. And he said he had to break the door down to get the latch to unlock. Now, the latch is still attached to the door, and there's no damage to the door jamb or anywhere else on the door. It's just a portion of the door where the latch was screwed to the door, and the screws have come out. So you can tell there was force, but was it enough to break the door down is what we're wondering. I'm wondering.
Me personally, I don't think so, because to me it looks like somebody yanked the door from inside.
Could have, yeah.
Because honestly, if you was on the outside and that door latch caught, and then you bust the door in, it's going to rip it completely off the wall.
I would have thought.
No, exactly what it would have done. It would have broke the head off of it.
Right. Something would have been broken.
Something else would have been broke.
I agree.
That right there just looked like to me like from the inside, it was staged.
Stage is 100% what I would show.
It looked staged. It looked like he went over there, latched it, whoever went over there, latched it, and then yanked on that door until those screws came out, and then he opened it up and was like, I busted it in.
I busted my door down. Yeah. I could totally 100% see that.
That's what it looks like to me.
Right. And I tend to agree with that.
But that's all speculation.
Yep. I'm not a lock expert, but I would, I'll go with that.
But I mean, anybody that does good at their job, they would come up to that conclusion too. Just saying.
And I know there's a lot of unanswered questions and evidence that you just can't overlook to leave this as a suicide. I just don't understand that. Now, the family has spent around $500,000 of their own money to try to get this case reopened. In February of 2022, the Pennsylvania Attorney General closed the case, leaving it classified as a suicide. But in August of 2022, the Chester County District Attorney's Office announced that it would reopen the investigation into her death. So hopefully the family can get some answers out of this.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, to me, this obviously looks like a kind of an abuse case.
It lines up that way.
It looks like somebody lost their shit.
Right, allegedly.
However you want to say it. It looks like they lost their shit and they got, anyway.
We know what it looks like.
I know what it, in my heart and in my gut, I know exactly what this looks like.
It looks like murder.
Yeah. And
because what they're saying is that he strangled her. Maybe she didn't die from the strangulation, but it just knocked her out, because you pass out first. Maybe that happened. And then he grabbed the knives and just went to town.
I mean, they have signs of abuse.
There are signs of something happening, yes.
There's signs of some abuse of something.
Well, you take in the bruises and you take in her recent mental health going downhill. And, I mean, it all lines up. It sounds like a classic case.
And I'm just not believing that it was her job, because like I said, if your job stresses you out enough to to where you have anxiety over it, quit. But find something that makes you happy.
100%. But I don't think that was the case, because when I said all aspects of her job, she was actually very active outside of the classroom. Just the whole education field to her was exciting.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm not believing that it was her job.
No, I'm not either.
I think that something was going on at home and it put a lot of stress and made her have anxiety and everything else. And it drove her to having the situation she was in. She even called her mom asking to move back home.
She wanted to go home, yeah.
She wanted to go home. If my daughter called me and said, hey, can I move? Absolutely, you can come right back. Come on. When are you going to be here?
Let me fluff your pillow.
Do you want me to come pick you up? I mean, there wouldn't be no, maybe you need to go see a therapist. No, if you want to come home, come the hell home.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm not trying to bash on the parents or nothing like that. I'm not.
No, and they live in, I believe, New York. So they were in a whole nother state. And so it wasn't like they could get to, and they were just trying to do the best they could. Okay, maybe if you are stressed out about work, try talking to somebody.
And they are doing everything they can right now.
They're going
to try to get some kind of answers, and try to get.
They know
exactly. They know, mm-hmm. and And I hope they find out everything they want to know, and I hope they bring her killer to justice.
Well, allegedly, in my opinion, this is for entertainment purposes only, blah, 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 disclaimer.
Yeah.
Sam has moved on. Like, a year after this happened, he distanced himself from the family. Mm-hmm. And, well, I mean, the dad at her funeral told him, you know, you're number one suspect, right? Yeah. So they've known since day one.
Yeah.
But he stayed in touch for about a year, and then he moved on with his life, and he is now married. He has children. He's living a whole separate life now.
Yeah. Wife, better watch out.
Stop it. Because, you know, this stuff keeps popping up because it's a very interesting case, and so I'm sure they see a lot of this. So,
yeah.
But there you go. You know how we feel.
Yeah. Take it how you want, but that's my honest opinion.
Yeah, poor Ellen.
Poor Ellen.
Maybe they'll get her some justice.
There's just, I don't know. There's no damn way somebody can stab himself 20 damn times. Especially 10 times in neck.
It's frustrating.
Yes. Like, there's no way, and they can classify that as a suicide.
All of these professionals.
There's no way somebody dropped the ball on this investigation.
150%.
Yeah.
But... okay, that was our take.
All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Please check us out on all the other platforms that we mentioned at the beginning of the show.
Yes. We're getting out there.
Yeah. Make sure you guys like, share, subscribe.
Tell your friends.
Yeah, tell all your friends. You guys have a great day.
Bye.